A slender woman in a black formal gown and diamond jewelry would have been deemed to be of exquisite, delicate beauty to most anyone. But Lydia knew she was only a gaudy, well-preserved corpse. "Welcome to my home," Lydia said with all the cordiality and warmth she could muster. Under the circumstances, it wasn't much.
"Good evening,"
the peacock replied in a deep voice. His accent was English and overly so.
"I am Lord Damian Blackthorn,"
he began, either missing or ignoring Lydia's immediate sneer.
"Steward of the Dark Emerald City in service to my liege, Her Grace, lady."
He got no further than that. His hand had been outstretched as he was in the process of introducing the woman to his immediate left, but Lydia interrupted him.
"Spare me your pretentious, insipid titles," she said.
Lydia sat in an ornate chair, facing them without ceremony. "You're Blackthorn, fine, and you are?" She looked to the poised, but plainly surprised, vampire princess beside him.
"Lady Anastasia Ilyana Kanatova,"
she said, in a cultivated Russian accent.
"Of course, and you?"
Lydia said to the third.
"I assume you have a much shorter name. Thorn? No, that's already been taken here. Ice. Ash. Blaze. No, wait. Cane. No. Shade.
Lucian,"
the third vampire said with a scowl.
"Two syllables,"
Lydia noted with a lifted eyebrow.
"I'm impressed."
"We do not come here to suffer petty mockery,"
Anastasia said coolly.
"No, of course not. But that can't be helped. I've met too many of your kind over the years. We'll cut right to it then. You know who I am?"
"Our court law masters have explained all we need to know,"
Blackthorn replied.
"Law masters," Lydia murmured. "Of course. Well, you may call me Lydia. I may be in the city for some time. I offer you the courtesy of establishing a working relationship now, rather than working one out after months or years of shadowy intrigue and friction."
It was Anastasia's turn to raise an eyebrow. Again, though, Blackthorn did the talking.
"Why should we wish to establish a relationship with one such as yourself?"
"Because, little vampire, I know all about your kind. I have power and resources, and I have none of your weaknesses. That said, I have no need to wrest control of the shadows of the city from you, such control as you may or may not have. But if it comes to it, I'll be happy to confirm through experimentation whether or not current literary trends are true, and see if you lot now merely sparkle in the..."
"What do you want?"
Anastasia asked. Her face remained placid, her voice still cool. Blackthorn and Lucian bristled under Lydia's blunt disrespect, but Anastasia maintained her self-control.
"Your kind spread throughout the city's nightlife. I am in search of two individuals, a young man and a woman. The male's name currently escapes me. The woman goes by the name of Lorelei. I have their likenesses here,"
she said, holding out the sheets of paper.
"I wish your assistance in locating and investigating them."
At a nod from Anastasia, Lucian stepped forward and took the pictures. He looked them over, shrugged, and showed them to Blackthorn. Anastasia kept her calm gaze on Lydia.
"And in return?"
she asked.
"In return, I shall respect your territorial boundaries. I will help you manage an impending shift in organized crime, so that no undue harm comes to your interests. I will also agree to come to your aid sometime in the future when you face a challenge to your crown or throne or whatever it is you call it."
Lydia sighed, waving a dismissive hand. When the vampires did not respond, Lydia conceded,
"And I may be inclined to demonstrate a greater degree of respect."
Anastasia favored her with a tight smile.
"How very generous of you."
She sat back down in her chair.
"Tell us the details."
"If you get bored, I want you to let me know,"
Alex said, sitting behind the wheel. The sun had gone down just a couple of hours earlier, leaving them with a surprisingly clear, comfortable night for late September.
"I'll have no trouble keeping myself amused,"
Lorelei assured him. She sat beside him, clad in an even smaller and even sexier little black dress than she had worn the night before. Her hands were folded demurely in her lap. Her innocent posture and playful tone sent out blatant signals.
Seriously, though, this is going to be a lot of college students, and most of them aren't sure what they're doing with their lives. Probably most still claim to be psych majors, for fuck's sake. Hardly any of us have real jobs, and I don't even know a lot of them besides the hostess and a few of her friends. I kind of doubt you'll find everyone interesting. They'll all be blown away by you, though, he added.
Alex, not everyone I have associated with has been some high-placed aristocrat or potentate. Far from it. I have spent much more time in simple farms and villages than in castles or mansions. Mortals fill their lives with complexities and meaning, regardless of their place in society. It's all just a matter of perspective.
You're just saying that to be tactful.
You know I would not do that, Alex, Lorelai replied. If I didn't want to go with you to this party, I'd have seduced you into staying in the hotel with me. Your friends will be there, won't they? I rather enjoyed their company the other night.
Well, there's my close friends, and there's people I know from school, and their friends. I've gotten along at these parties, sure, but I wouldn't call just any one of them up at night to see if they wanted to go catch a movie.
Lorelai shrugged. Not every pleasant association can lead to something life-altering. Arriving at their general destination, Alex began looking for a parking space. As he did, he asked tentatively,
Demons don't ever have friends, do they?
Not among our own kind. There is occasionally the pretense of alliance or loyalty. But it is all out of self-interest, and all know it. I have felt a passing appreciation for some few mortals in my life. But I kept my distance, she explained as Alex parked the car. You and yours are the first friends I've ever had. He turned to look at her, and found her solemn gaze telling him 100 things. I want you to have a good time at this party tonight, my love. She shifted a bit in her seat, sliding black lace down from underneath her short dress and off her legs. Lorelai dangled the lace between herself and Alex without ever breaking her stare. A very good time. They were parked out on a residential street at night, lined with cars against both curbs. It was Magnolia again, the same neighborhood where Alex met Raymond Cordingly and confronted the reality of what Lorelai was for the first time. Their destination wasn't as opulent or large a home as Cordingly's, but it could hold a big party. Parking was scarce. Alex and Lorelai had a couple of blocks to walk before they got to the house. But before that, Alex opened Lorelai's door, offered his hand in helping her out, closed the door, and then took a knee before her on the pavement. His hands slid up her thighs, pushing up the hem of her dress. With his eyes on hers, he gently, lovingly invaded her wet flesh with a kiss. Lorelai's eyes closed. She moaned out loud in response to his affection. He didn't keep it up long, meaning it as a kiss and an indulgence, rather than a full service, and she knew it. He let her down easy from that height of pleasure, then rose to stand in front of her. Lorelai slung one leg over his shoulder just as he stood, straightening it and bending it upward at the hip with grace. Wordlessly, she loosened his jeans and pushed away his button-down shirt. Lorelai's intense stare held as he pushed into her and said, I love you, Lorelai. She almost returned his words, but the pleasure of having him inside her instead drew from her a wordless announcement of pleasure, and then another. His hips pushed her bare ass up against the car. She threw her arms around him, deciding to reciprocate his love physically rather than in words. Swept away by mutual urges, neither thought to have Lorelai employ her supernatural knack for hiding in plain sight. A BMW passed by, slowing long enough for the older woman at the wheel to yell out in disgust, Hey, go inside, this is a decent neighborhood! Laughing happily, Lorelai called back, Not tonight, it's not. After 300 years, Alastair Prescott Pennington was accustomed to being the center of attention at social events. He was young when he was ushered into unlife. Barely over 20 years and having seen little of the world past his small English village, his artistic talents caught the eye of a passing ancient, who swept him away into the macabre grandeur of the undying society of the night. Alistair willingly gave up his life's blood to transcend his drab, common mortal existence. At first, he knew only emotional turmoil and angst, oh, the angst. But with time, Alistair adapted to the realities of unlife. His artistic and social acumen served him well, both in mortal circles and among the undead. His unending youth also worked to great advantage. Alistair's eternally young face and voice allowed him to keep current and blend in with the mortal world. He found little difficulty in feeding. His current dalliance was Brittany, a lovely, buxom young blonde college student, enchanted by Alistair's deeply thoughtful eyes and his dark, mysterious ways. Alistair arrived outside her window an hour past sunset. Tonight, she asked, breathlessly dazzled as always by his dark charms, if he would accompany her to a party. Brittany's eyes shimmered with joy when he said he would love to meet her friends. She knew he would be a great hit, being so worldly and magnetic and talented. Alistair knew it too. Until they arrived, and hardly anyone noticed him. Oh, he and Brittany made an entrance. He came through the door, brooding and enigmatic with the lovely, innocent blonde on his arm. Heads turned. Conversations fell to murmurs. Brittany's grip on his forearm tensed, as she realized with excitement that all eyes were on her. Well, on him, anyway. But she was with him, and that was exciting enough in its own right. Then someone pressed through the crowd and said, "Oh my gosh, Brittany, you're here. You've got to see, there's fire dancing outside." Brittany hardly hesitated. The vampire's skin paled an extra shade lighter as people rose from the foyer and the living room, all headed to the rear of the house. Alistair let his date pull free from him. He wanted nothing to do with terrible, dreadful flames. He stood in the foyer alone as VNV Nation began blasting outside and party guests began to whistle and cheer. Slowly, almost reluctantly, Alistair followed out into the spacious backyard. He was quite content to lurk at the rear of the crowd, eventually finding a planter upon which he could stand balance with his inhuman grace. That grace, he found, was quickly put to shame. She was beautiful, clad in a tiny, flattering black party dress, a black pearl choker, and a charming, confident, arousing smile. Her long black hair was swept back in a simple ponytail. In her hands spun contact juggler sticks, burning at each end. To either side of her, in the damp grass, sat small jars of some slow-burning fuel. He overheard from someone in the crowd that this was entirely improvised. Sherry, the hostess, happened to have a few of the right toys. The rest was all thrown together from her absent family's camping gear. Someone brought the stereo system down from an upstairs bedroom. Had Alistair not heard that, he'd never have imagined that this could be unrehearsed. The vampire couldn't get over her appalling comfort with fire. She spun those sticks terrifyingly close to her flesh, tossing and catching them even at their burning tips, and twirling them between and around her limbs, her waist, and even her neck. Her legs extended and bent and swayed with mesmerizing sensuality. Her performance went through a single song, thrilling the mortals but leaving Alistair shaken. Someone queued up the next song as she twirled the sticks with great speed to blow out the flames. Then she reached out her hand to someone else in the audience, who provided a can of some clear liquid, more fuel, of course, and two thinner sticks with their tips wrapped with cloth or pitch or some other covering that would hold a flame. Another song by the same band began. She dipped her sticks in the fuel, then in the flame of a jar next to her, and her performance grew doubly unsettling to the vampire. As she danced, she would trace one end of a stick across her flesh. An arm, a leg, even across the top of that magnificent chest, and leave the trail of fuel on her skin burning for a second or two, before rubbing it out with a single, smooth swipe of her hand. Alistair had seen such things before, but rarely so close. It wasn't the sort of thing that the undead looked upon with keen interest. His kind, for all their resilience, was at least as flammable as mortal man. "My love," she called out, her face glowing with an alluring smile. "Do you trust me?" The answer came from within the audience,
with my life, said a young man in jeans and a black button-down shirt.
Catcalls and whistles erupted from the crowd. She took full advantage of the innuendo suggested by her audience, beckoning him forward.
Come to me, my love, she urged him, fixing him with a smoldering gaze that got the audience howling.
Her fingers twirled a flaming stick, even as they gestured to him. The young man obeyed, confidently, standing still before her at her direction. Alistair found him passably handsome and acceptably dressed, but not particularly stylish. He seemed strikingly ordinary next to her. The dancer slid around him, bending and twisting and even grinding. Her lover seemed to understand that he served mostly as a prop for her performance. He had the rhythm and confidence to fit with her, and had good instincts for when to slip an arm around her waist or along whichever leg she threw around his hips, but he did nothing to distract the audience from her. The flames swept all around him, often coming very close. Alistair would have fled in terror in the first seconds, but this youth seemed to put his life in the dancer's hands with genuine comfort. Then she escalated to fire-eating, which sent a shudder through Alistair's undead body. She doused one flaming side of her thin stick in her mouth. She extinguished another the same way, until it became clear that she had only allowed the still-burning fuel to drip into her mouth. With a puff, she reignited her torch. She teased the crowd with this twice, and in the end, with her back to her lover, she dripped and dripped flaming liquid onto her tongue before she extinguished the last of her sticks. She turned her lover, ensuring that they both stood side-on to the audience, and pulled him close while the flame burned on her tongue. It went out with their kiss, which was long, deep, and loudly encouraged by the audience. The performance set a tone for the night. Late arrivals would only be swept away by the energy. Alistair realized that for once, he would not likely be the center of attention.
I believe I saw a vampire enter, observed a voice coming from over Rachel's shoulder.
The angel sat on a rooftop overlooking the party, her legs gathered up against her chest with her arms around them.
Yeah, saw him.
You're not concerned? Hannah asked.
Short bus kids of the supernatural, Rachel snorted. If Alex can't handle one of them on his own, let alone Lorelei, then I've misjudged this whole situation so badly I'll apologize to everyone and take every shit job that comes down the pike for the next 100 years.
The older angel smiled at Rachel fondly before taking a seat beside her.
You are not prone to making apologies.
Nope.
Yet you've always been proactive. I'm surprised you don't go deal with him anyway.
I want them to have this weekend together. You saw them in the backyard just now, didn't you?
Rachel's tone was wistful.
I've been watching them since last night. They're beautiful together.
You sound sad. Are you bothered by this morning?
No,
Rachel said.
Michael wasn't mad. You're not mad. Everyone else can eat me.
Then why do you sound sad?
At length, Rachel sighed.
I think I'm gonna get fired, Hannah.
Hannah fell silent, watching the house with Rachel as other guests arrived.
You are falling in love with him?
Sure seems like.
Rachel nodded.
More and more every day. I don't want to just watch over him. I want to be with him, she added as a confession. Them.
That would be a scandal,
Hannah mused dryly.
I hated her at first, but she's not what she was. Now I look at her, and I see how much she's changed. I can see why he loves her so much. And it's not just because he's young and dazzled. She may be a trashy demon slut, Rachel said with a wry grin. But she's also becoming something wonderful.
You believe they would both accept you?
I know they would.
And whatever the hosts think or say about it,
Rachel shrugged. Hannah laughed ruefully.
You've never been one to care what others say. Now more than ever. But you are also not unaffected by the mortal magic that struck you at the start of all this. Everyone knows that. Your situation is unique. I don't think that your censure would be as bad as precedent suggests.
She reached out to put her arm around the other angel. Rachel allowed it, leaning in to let her head fall on her mentor's shoulders.
Whatever you choose, I will be here for you.
I need to know what you know, Hannah, Rachel said in a soft voice. Tell me what you meant in the church yesterday.
Hannah sighed. That Alex had been here before, that's not unusual. So many souls come back again and again. He's no more or less special than others in that regard. It's just that what he does with his lives is painful.
How do you know?
The other angel's face darkened with a bit of sadness. I watched him once, long ago.
Rachel's head came up. You did? But you're not a guardian.
Oh, maybe not as a full dedication of my time, but I've always kept my hand in.
Hannah shrugged. She looked up at the moon.
He wasn't anyone terribly special, just another young Greek farmer. He loved a girl who married an older, wealthier man who in turn treated her awfully. These days, in this nation, her husband would be imprisoned. Alex, my Alex, helped her from afar as best he could, but he had no claim on her. Not until the young woman's husband died of, well, he had a mysterious fall down a hillside. She smirked. Just enough of a stigma followed her after she'd suffered to ward off any other serious suitor. Only Alex remained. They were very much in love. Hannah mused. She laughed a bit. He forswore the pleasures of all other women and men. For her, it was a different place and time and another life.
What happened?
A scant few days later, he stood with men of his city on a hilltop, at a place called Marathon. He argued, along with others, to attack the much larger invading Persian force right away, while it was still assembling on the beach, without waiting for Spartan reinforcements. He wasn't as eloquent as Miltiades and the other leaders, but he spoke well. They valued that in those days, you know, public speaking. Men valued generosity and honor, self-control and respect for women and elders, but above all, they cared about persuasiveness and skill in battle. By the grace of heaven, he had all of that.
Rachel just watched and listened in silence as Hannah stared at the moon.
The next morning, Hannah said, the Athenians and their Platean allies charged and routed the Persian army. I protected him as much as I could, but in battles, men die. He was brave and effective and so good with that spear. But before it was all over, he put himself in front of a mortal blow meant for the man at his side. History remembers the man he saved by the name of Aeschylus. He and his new wife never had a chance to make love, even once. Hannah added quietly, there just wasn't time.
Rachel looked on in silence. Eventually, Hannah spoke again.
I have made some inquiries, things one is not supposed to ask about. Your influence at work, I'm sure.
Hannah smiled a bit, but the smile soon faded.
He has gotten right back into the queue, so to speak, every time. No time spent in heaven to rest or reflect. He just gets right back in line for his next chance. He hasn't had as many lives as some others, but his lifetimes have never been long. And despite his virtues, he has somehow always been terribly unlucky in love. He has always been on the side of the angels, as they say, but he has always died young, sometimes in war, sometimes not, but always by the sword.
Not this time, Rachel said, with an equally quiet but determined voice.
Perhaps not,
Hannah conceded.
He has protectors, and he isn't helpless. Lorelei's hold over him precludes so many possible deaths. She will keep him youthful and virile, to a truly unfair age for a mortal. Your influence may even be a multiplier, but he has always died young, she said again, and always by the sword.
She turned to look Rachel in the eye.
The Archangel Michael asked me why this situation should be allowed to continue. I told him that at this point, I feel we owe it to Alex. I only hope for his sake, and yours, that he finally has the long life full of love that he has always deserved. But I do not know how to break such a pattern as I have seen.
Hannah extended her hand out to cover Rachel's.
I don't want to see you left with a broken heart, because you have fallen in love with a mortal doomed to die a tragically short life. I hope to protect you from such a thing.
A tear formed in Rachel's eye.
I think it's too late for that.
A week ago, Jocelyn would have given Alex the time of day, but not much more than that. She had little interest in him through high school and middle school before it. He was a good enough classmate. She could always borrow his notes or sometimes copy his homework, and he was always witty enough. But she'd never have considered going out with him. Now, however, he held her full attention. She didn't quite notice her own flirtatious posture, or how she subtly licked her lips, or the way she turned her smooth, shapely mocha brown legs toward his. She did, however, notice the sex appeal that Alex had never shown before. She felt all too aware of his fit body, his scent, his confidence, and the ease with which he handled her attention. The guy beside her was a far cry from the boy she knew from school. She was also aware of the three other pretty girls in the living room who paid close attention to him for all the same reasons. Others took part in the conversation, though not all showed such interest in Alex's personal attention. There were a couple other girls, a couple of guys. That odd emo boy band-looking guy loomed intently in one corner, while his date practically ignored him in favor of Alex. Jocelyn, at least, was unattached. She had one other advantage over her competition, too. She had known Alex for, like, forever. Most everyone else in the living room was a stranger.
I always knew you were brave, Jocelyn smiled. You stood up to that crazy sub we had in Spanish when she started giving people detention for sneezing.
Oh, whatever, I was freaked out. I just didn't want to get hauled away someplace to get shot in the head. So I got shot in the chest right there in the parking garage instead. 'Cause I'm brilliant like that.
Alex smirked.
I heard you jumped in front of the gun to protect your friend, said Brittany.
That's what I heard too, nodded Brittany.
Wow, did you really do that?
Asked Brittany. Behind her tight-lipped smile, Jocelyn gritted her teeth. Three blondes with the same goddamn name but different spellings, she thought, and not a whole brain between them. I feel like I'm on a reality show.
No, she was out of the way from it,
Alex said.
She fought, too. It's not like Taylor just cowered behind me.
Shit, I'd have shoved that gun up the dude's ass,
snorted Tucker, seated on a second couch opposite Jocelyn and Alex. He kept his arm around Brittany, who didn't seem to notice her date anymore. Jocelyn wished Brittany would, both to shut him up and to turn her away from Alex.
Right on,
agreed Tucker's friend, some jock named Jimmy. He, too, held a passively derisive expression.
What'd you do after you got shot?
I pretty much fell down at that point, Alex said. That's kind of what happens.
Yeah, I guess maybe if you were a bigger guy, you might stay on your feet.
Tucker shrugged. He was, of course, a bigger guy. Jocelyn glanced over at Alex, wondering what he'd say. She already knew the whole story from Taylor, which was why she'd brought it up in the first place. Jocelyn realized Alex was downplaying his heroics. She found his humble telling of it all adorable, but she bristled at the running commentary from the two guys suffering from penis envy.
Nah,
came a southern drawl from behind Jimmy.
Size don't matter much. I fell down when I got shot too, and I'm bigger than Alex.
Wade stood behind Tucker, Brittany, and Jimmy's couch, wearing one of those plain gray t-shirts marked Army, his John Deere ball cap and a smug grin. He had a beer bottle in his hand.
Yeah?
Jimmy asked, frowning a bit at this new intrusion.
Where'd you get shot?
Afghanistan,
Wade said. Wanna see my scar?
Sure, dog,
Jimmy chuckled, figuring he'd call the Hicks bluff.
Oh, no,
Alex murmured just loud enough for Jocelyn to hear. He had a grin on his face, but he warned her.
Don't look.
Wade had already dropped his pants and turned away before Alex finished. He gave the other two guys and Tucker's girlfriend a good view of his ass.
I know this must sound strange,
Wade said, over the chorus of shrieks and protests.
But if and one of y'all boys give it a kiss, it might hurt a bit less.
Ah, dude, Tucker yelled.
Fucking freak, Jimmy snapped.
Wade, Alex laughed.
Put that thing away. That's against the Geneva Convention.
Jocelyn wasn't bothered, but she buried her face in Alex's shoulder in feigned surprise anyway. He put his arm around her as he laughed, probably without thinking about it. She felt grateful to Wade on a couple of levels after that. He had scattered most of the room.
I think I need a cigarette, maybe a beer,
Wade said. Thankfully, his pants were back up.
I think you need therapy,
Alex chuckled.
I think you need to be cut off already,
Jocelyn snickered. She stayed tucked against Alex. He didn't object.
Nonsense. This is my first beer. I only ever moon people sober. You never know what horrible things might happen if and you show your ass when drunk.
With that, he wandered off to find the front door.
Alex,
came a sultry voice. Jocelyn and Alex looked up to see his girlfriend slink through the room. Jocelyn suspected she'd been created on a lab table. She also had to concede, inwardly at least, that Lorelai's charisma was a little intimidating. Jocelyn wondered if she should move, but Lorelai didn't seem the least bit fazed by her presence or her position.
Hey, you,
Alex smiled.
Where have you been?
Again, Jocelyn noticed his easy tone in the face of this incredible woman. He'd always been so shy with girls. How did that all change so fast?
Tending bar with Drew,
Lorelai grinned. Her voice dropped to a conspiratorial level, still completely unbothered by Jocelyn's inclusion.
We've been putting less into the drinks than we've let on. Several of your fellow partygoers aren't nearly as intoxicated as they'd like to believe. We thought about going the other way, but this just seems naughtier. Would you like anything, though? I'm perfectly willing to drive later.
I'm good,
Alex said, shaking his head.
I came to ask if Jason turned up yet.
Nah, he texted about a half hour ago. He works tonight, so he'll be here a bit late.
Jason Cohen?
Jocelyn wondered aloud.
Yeah.
Oh, he's coming? I haven't seen him in ages.
Alex smirked.
He'll be flattered all to hell that you remembered his name.
Jocelyn waved a dismissive hand at Alex as she stayed cuddled up to his side.
Psh, whatever. I remembered you, didn't I?
Lorelai reached over to touch Alex's free hand.
I'll be around,
she said, before she followed Wade's path outside. With Lorelai gone, Jocelyn turned closer in on Alex. She put a hand on his chest.
Okay, Taylor told me a little about her. What the hell's up with that?
She grinned.
What do you mean?
If I saw a hottie like me curled up on my man the way I am right now, and I'm not saying I've got a man right now, because I don't, but if that was me, I'd be telling a bitch off, and she doesn't seem like she's easily intimidated. But she didn't even blink at me.
Alex grunted.
Well, she's got zero security issues. You know she's got me. We've talked about, you know, that sort of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And we've, you know, set our boundaries for ourselves and with each other. Informed consent and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Alex swallowed. The most desirable hottie, unofficial of course, of his graduating class looked on expectantly.
And she knows she's never gonna lose me, so there's that.
So where are your boundaries?
Alex admitted in a quiet, somewhat embarrassed voice.
I pretty much don't have any.
So many more stars in Afghanistan,
Lorelai observed. Wade turned his head away from the sky to his unexpected company. He had finished his cigarette, and now simply stood in the shadow of the house, looking at the nighttime sky.
Yeah.
he said.
Yeah, there are. A lot of light pollution in the city.
I wanted to say thank you.
For what?
You may well have saved Alex's life the other night.
And likely mine.
Had Gorge not been dealt with the way you all handled him, I don't know what would have happened.
Wade shrugged. Wasn't like Alex just sat on his hands.
No, but he did not stand alone, and that made all the difference. Wade shrugged again, but said nothing. Lorelei went on, I want you to know that you have nothing to fear from me, for Alex's sake, or yours, or any of his friends. He has my absolute loyalty.
I've always figured he was a good judge of character.
Lorelei nodded. I would like to consider you and the others my friends as well.
I guess I'd like that too.
You sound wary.
Lorelei smiled softly. Well, my buddy's supernatural seductress demon girlfriend whatever just snuck up to me all by her lonesome to say she wants to be my friend while the hottest gal in our graduating class is in there practically in his lap.
Wade explained.
It's potentially a little awkward.
Lorelei's smile broadened.
I understand, she said, which is why you should probably forget.
The succubus breathed, stepping directly into Wade to wrap one hand around his neck and draw him close.
That we ever did this.
Wade's inner strength, independence, and confidence served him well. He needed it to have gone where he'd been and then return home to deal with his emotional wounds. But against Lorelei's direct efforts, he could only hold out for a moment or two. Wade was too lonely and ultimately too vulnerable, after all he'd been through, to turn away someone like Lorelei. She held him close, breathing deeply as she invaded his mouth with her aggressive, insistent kiss. He reciprocated, unable to resist the physical urges she aroused in him. When her mouth parted from his and she said, "Shh," he quickly grew calm.
Forget the kiss, Lorelei instructed. Do not long for me. Remember all else, including this,
she whispered. And with that, Lorelei embraced him neither as a lover, nor as a target of seduction, but as a friend. He wouldn't remember exactly how that hug happened, but he would remember hugging her back. He would remember her saying,
I have been around a very long time, Wade. I have seen war many, many times. I may well be the worst counselor in the world, but should you wish to talk, I am here, and I am your friend.
Wade held her in the darkness and nodded his head.
Thanks,
he mumbled.
She needs a little more persuasion in her drink, if you know what I mean.
Tucker winked as he leaned against the bar in the kitchen.
I got you, bro,
Drew winked. He took the red plastic cup from the other young man.
Let me fix this up. She won't even taste it in there. All right. Thanks, man.
Tucker nodded. He slapped his hand into Drew's, leaving behind a $5 bill before walking away. Drew looked at the green likeness of Abraham Lincoln with a mixture of amused surprise and indignation.
The fuck?
He mumbled.
You have a fan, Lorelei grinned. Yeah, I guess,
Drew said, nodding to acknowledge her return. He flicked the fiver onto the back counter of the kitchen. With any luck, the hostess of the party would find it before anyone else did.
Bartender shouldn't be so quick to turn down tips. Bartender's supposed to be a lot older than I am, too,
Drew chuckled. He turned to fixing the drink for whichever Brittany it was that Tucker had brought to the party, smoothly ensuring that it was fruitier and less alcoholic than the weakest wine cooler.
You could be good at that,
Lorelei offered. They had no customers in the kitchen at the moment. She busied herself throwing out empty bottles and cups.
Or do you have other career plans? I always figured I'd probably just go into bouncing,
he mused.
Not sure I want to work behind a desk all my life. I'm basically nocturnal, too, and I'd like to go all the way with college, but none of the majors I'd be interested in lead to real jobs. Know what I'm saying?
I do, she nodded.
You know I got this, right? If you want to go chill with Alex, I'm okay.
Lorelei smiled.
We've been together since last night. You could use a little space. I rather like your company, and being back here with you makes for fewer hopeful suitors. Considering this, Drew nodded.
I got you.
I am also very grateful to you, she said quietly, not wanting passing partiers to hear, for standing with Alex the way you did, for being his friend, and for being so kind to me, given what you now know. He wasn't sure what to say to that at first. Drew mumbled with a shrug of his thick shoulders.
You ain't gotta be grateful. He's my boy. They're all my boys. You be good to him, I'll be good to you.
How did the two of you become friends?
Nobody ever asks me that. I was the new kid in grade school. Alex just decided we were gonna be friends, and that was basically it. I mean, we're interested in totally different things. He's always been into all that star stuff. Star Trek, Stargate, Star Search.
Drew grinned as he handed Brittany's drink to a passing Tucker.
But yeah, I was the new kid, and he was just like, hey, I'll show you around at lunch or whatever. And I thought, cool. I was literally the token black at that school at first, like, literally. And little kids can be shitty even when they don't mean it. But Alex was cool. Then we turned out to be living nearby each other, and pretty soon we were always at each other's houses.
I thought you were a year ahead of the others in school. Drew nodded.
Yeah, but they did this whole reading group thing in elementary where they mixed kids up. I was in the top group for my grade, but that nerd was in it too, and he was a year younger.
So you simply decided to be friends, Lorelai observed.
He did. Yeah, me too, I guess. I got pretty popular as we got older, and he didn't exactly fit in with that crowd. But I never let anyone shut him out. And it's not like he had no social skills or something, just he was different. Hell, sometimes it was like he was just older than everyone else, more mature. Didn't want to do the same stupid high school drama shit as everybody else. Made him a drag to be with in a few situations, but I kind of had to grow up fast, too. So, got where he was coming from, and just, you know, different interests, different hobbies.
I suspect you have at least one hobby in common, at this point, Lorelai suggested with a wink.
Well, I don't want to sound disrespectful, but I'm clearly glad the boy's finally getting a little booty. Clearly, just saying.
Lorelai nodded. It's been difficult to get him to let go and have a good time.
Yeah, he's like that. Always been waiting for the other shoe to drop. Probably part of why he's never had anyone before you. Alex seems to always expect things to fall apart. It's kind of nice to see him get some real confidence after all that's gone down this week.
Hearing the note of appreciation for her in his voice, Lorelai smiled. Then the self-consciousness faded. You do all right for yourself, I imagine.
I do. I do at that, Drew agreed.
She was staring. He liked it, of course, but he wasn't entirely comfortable with her looking at him like that. For all Drew's social acumen, even he could be put at a loss for words. He couldn't know that Lorelai placed them both under her power of concealment. They were still visible, but for the moment no one would notice them. If I flirt with you, it is because I enjoy it and am being friendly, Lorelai said in a husky voice as she slid up against the well-built, well-dressed young man. You need never worry that I will betray your friend or your friendship with him. But I am your friend as well, she added, before drawing him into a long, deep, lusty kiss. Forget this moment, she breathed across his lips. Forget my touch. Forget these words. Do not burden yourself with desire for me. You will find your own treasures.
We're not supposed to be upstairs, Alex noted.
I'm not supposed to do a lot of things, Jocelyn said. She closed the bedroom door behind him. The lights were on a dimmer knob, which Jocelyn used to create just enough light for them to see by. It also turned out that Jocelyn knew how to lock the door.
This is Sherry's room?
Yeah, Jocelyn nodded, stepping closer to him. Had a quick talk with her while you were in the bathroom. She slid one hand up along his chest, curling her fingers over his shoulder and leaning into him. Her big brown eyes looked up into his.
I'm kinda used to guys being a little more aggressive.
I can't imagine a guy ever honestly thinking he was in charge while he's with you,
Alex said. A year ago, he'd have been overjoyed that Jocelyn was even talking to him. He'd have probably ruined it, too. Now he drew a thrill just from feeling so relaxed about this.
I like to let a guy have his illusions, but it's good that you know where we stand,
Jocelyn grinned meaningfully.
So, as long as we understand each other, I'm not gonna have to make everything happen here, right?
At that, Alex pulled her against him. His kiss was aggressive, but not rough. The kiss broke off, only long enough for Alex to unbutton her blouse. Jocelyn hummed a note of appreciation, which soon turned to a gasp of pleasure as his hands slid over her belly and her sides. He kissed her again. His hands slid lower against her skin. The noises from Jocelyn became less appreciative and more pleading. She was used to having a little more control than this.
So, how long have you been with that boyfriend? What's his name? Alex Carlisle?
Since Monday,
Lorelai answered, diligently mixing Carson's rum and coke. Her broad-shouldered customer leaned in on the bar, clearly staring in the hopes of making eye contact and charming her with his smile.
Less than a week? And he's already ditching you at a party? Man, that's not okay.
A pale, brooding young face, in stylish black clothing, glided past as Lorelai passed Carson's drink. He seemed to be listening in. She scowled inwardly, but maintained her cool demeanor for Carson.
So, what do you do when you're not tending bar at house parties?
He asked. Whatever makes my lover happy.
She shrugged.
Whoa. Seriously? So, what if he wanted you to—
He would not,
she interrupted dryly.
You don't even know what I was gonna say.
I do indeed,
Lorelai smiled. She looked at Carson levelly as her voice took on a sweet tone.
Your ambitions are plain as day, and your approach as clumsy as a drunken vagrant. Come back to me in 10 years when you have learned some measure of subtlety and charisma. I shall laugh at you then as well, but I will at least give you a round of applause for your efforts.
Stunned and speechless, Carson withdrew. Lorelai ignored him, turning her eyes briefly to the darkly dressed shadow floating back toward the living room. As she watched, Drew leaned in to say quietly,
Damn, you smack everyone down that hard?
When I feel like it, Lorelai grinned back. I'm not from a very nice neighborhood.
The bar grew a bit busier over the last few minutes. Guests continued to show up as the night wore on. Drew and Lorelai happily mixed and doled out more drinks for more people as the faces became a bit more diverse. It was much more than a high school reunion party. Paths diverged after graduation, after all, and most everyone had made new friends. There were multiple schools, workplaces, and social circles present. The underage drinkers soon became the minority. That was a bit of a relief for the host. Sherry hadn't stressed about it, but it was at least a minor worry that was reduced through this dilution. The slender hostess began pitching in to help in the kitchen at Lorelai's invitation. She slipped between the older woman and the younger bartender, pointedly staying closer to Drew and bumping into him a lot. Lorelai was pleased to see it. Sherry was an adorable, lithe young redhead, dusted with freckles and classically Irish features from head to toe. She also had an obvious liking for the young man behind the kitchen counter. The scent of Lorelai's lusty kiss upon his lips left Sherry less inhibited about showing it.
God, you two are lifesavers.
Sherry laughed as she bent around Drew to grab yet another bottle of juice for mixers.
You can stay all night, right?
The question seemed to be to both of them, but Lorelai knew better. She didn't answer.
I ain't got anywhere to be in the morning.
Drew shrugged.
I can stay or leave whenever.
Sherry stood up straight, very much against him. There was a confident, taunting glint in her eye.
Or just stay, she suggested.
Drew hardly needed the help of Lorelai's kiss. He was more than capable of making things happen on his own.
That could happen,
he answered. Just as Sherry stepped back, though, Drew was struck between the eyes by a flying black hair scrunchie. The source stood on the other side of the counter.
Stop flirting and make me a drink, demanded the scrunchie's happy owner. I'm growing a beard over here.
Aw, it's my girl, what's up?
Drew grinned broadly.
I didn't know you were coming.
Taylor would have claimed the hug to which she was entitled, but with the counter between them, she settled for a fist bump. She wore simple but flattering blue jeans and a snug black t-shirt.
I'm a rebel, an outlaw. I'm making my own rules from now on.
Oh, Taylor blinked.
Hello, Taylor,
Lorelai said, finally turning around from the opposite counter. She passed a glass of something yellowish and foamy off to the woman next to Taylor.
It's good to see you.
Yeah,
Taylor blinked. Hi, Lorelai.
Ah, you two know each other?
Drew asked.
Yeah, we met Wednesday night at the mall.
And the hospital,
Taylor said.
She hadn't taken her eyes off Lorelai,
nor did Lorelai turn away from her. The young brunette wasn't hostile, but she seemed a bit unsure of how to handle this. Lorelai took the initiative. She stepped around from the kitchen counter, smoothly navigating through the crowd to come closer.
Taylor, I hoped for a chance to talk to you more, she began.
Wednesday night was crazy for all of us.
I know you just got here, but could I steal you away for a bit? Would you mind?
Pausing only to glance at Drew, who was already distracted again by Sherry, Taylor nodded.
Sure, but is Alex around?
He's here. Lorelai smiled knowingly. But he's in a private conversation.
Oh my god, you're fucking great.
Jocelyn breathed out.
Wow, just... wow.
I'm flattered, Alex said.
His thrusts slowed to a sensual rhythm, but didn't cease.
I just didn't want to be like one of those guys who rushes things.
How many guys do you think I've been with?
She asked, with a bit of an indignant pout.
I wouldn't guess a very high number. Not as many as there have been guys who were hoping they could get with you.
Jocelyn made a feigned gasp.
Oh, so you're saying I'm a tease?
Alex grunted.
Well, I just keep digging deeper. Can we stop talking now?
She reached up and grabbed his hair fiercely.
I think you'd better.
She grinned.
He's in bed with someone else, isn't he? Like, right now?
Lorelai had hardly closed the door to the upstairs bathroom behind them. As she twisted the knob to lock it, she said,
Yes?
Taylor looked at her in shock.
What the hell? How can you be okay with that?
I encourage him,
Lorelai shrugged.
But that's...
Taylor,
Lorelai broke in.
Be calm. You're safe here. Speak truth to me, and believe that I will speak only truth to you.
She watched Taylor closely, noting the brief flutter of the young woman's eyes under the power of Lorelai's suggestion. Satisfied, she spoke again.
You weren't bothered to find him with Audrey that night, were you?
I was,
Taylor stammered. She rested her butt against the countertop around the bathroom sink while Lorelai stood straight and poised, just to her left, between Taylor and the door.
I was a little bothered, but I wasn't mad at him. I just thought she didn't deserve him. She's a real bitch, and he's always been such a nice guy.
Right up until he started jumping every woman with a pulse, anyway.
Why weren't you mad at him for that with Audrey, then?
It's not like he was my boyfriend.
Nor is he now. So why be angry with him? He has betrayed no one.
Why aren't you angry with him?
I'm not like other women.
She saw that it wasn't enough of an answer.
This will sound strange, I know, she explained, but I want this for him. The one thing he has longed for most is love. He has found that with me. I have no fears for our relationship. Therefore, I want him to have what makes him happy. And I know that in addition to his longing for love, his sexual appetites are exceptional. I am not saying others should feel this way, far from it. I'm simply saying this works for me.
It's a testament to his character that he isn't a lying, philandering pig, given how strong his sex drive is. The older woman smirked.
Yet if I asked him to sleep only with me, forsaking all others for as long as we are together, he would.
Had he fallen for someone else before me, he would be just as loyal to her. All the willing women in the world would be as ashes in his mouth if he thought they came at the expense of another's pain. I've had to work to get him to simply enjoy himself, she said. I want him to have his cake and eat it, too. I have been there myself. I have taken that too far to turn back. To demand he be exclusive with me now would break his heart, because he would have to let down certain others.
Taylor looked on skeptically. He's already got another girlfriend?
No, but there are those very close to his heart. There is already at least one other with whom he will inevitably grow much closer, likely as lovers. Seeing Taylor frown quizzically, Lorelai said, You remember the blonde in the parking garage?
A little,
Taylor shrugged. Her frown grew deeper.
More, now that you mention it. Didn't she help us?
Lorelai nodded. Oh, she looks out for him. They share a deep connection. I must leave it to him to explain more to you. After a moment, Taylor ventured, Who else? You? Taylor shook her head.
Oh, no. I'm not looking for a new boyfriend, not right now, and not to share.
Understandable. But you came here tonight looking for Alex. You came knowing he was involved with another, and knowing that he cares for you. You have seen how much you mean to him, and that he will keep silent at your request. And you have already shared a brief intimacy that has surely filled your thoughts since, one that you yearn to share again.
Lorelai shifted to stand directly in front of the younger woman. Taylor knew it should feel much more uncomfortable, or even intimidating, but it didn't. Her discomfort was mild and easy to overcome.
He loves me, Taylor. He will never leave me, nor I him. Have no illusions about that. Yet, at the same time, there is a place in his heart for you that will always exist, independent of me or any other relationship in his life. Perhaps not as a lover, but certainly as more than a friend. You are safe with him, Taylor. You are safe with me.
The frown remained, but she nodded. I don't feel threatened, Taylor said. Just a little confused and I don't know what else.
Of course you're confused. You live in a society that lauds monogamous love. There's nothing wrong with that. It works for most. I am a different sort. Put to rest your concerns about how I feel in this.
Taylor shrugged.
I guess I can do that. Then it comes to you, Taylor. You came here looking for Alex tonight.
Yeah, I did.
Why?
Because it wasn't until all the shit with him at the mall and then my ex-boyfriend, she corrected, that I realized what a good friend he really is. Gabriel, my ex, he's not the first guy to treat me badly. He was fine at first, but then we got to UW and he had girls throwing themselves at him and he turned into a total shit. I was about to break up with him anyway when Alex turned up, but I wasn't looking for a rebound. I still can't believe I hooked up with Alex like that. God, that was so crazy.
I can believe it.
Lorelai put in with a quiet, sly smile.
But tell me, she said seriously, do you regret it?
No, Taylor answered. She fidgeted a bit. I don't. I've been happy about it, actually. I felt safe with Alex, all of a sudden, like emotionally, before those guys turned up. Even right when I saw him shopping there, I had this instant reaction like, hey, that's my friend who's always so nice to me. I've missed him. But then my boss was all over him, and that pissed me off. And once I had chased her off, just being alone with Alex felt so good and, well, hot. So I guess I felt like there was something special there. But now here he is, getting into who knows how many women's pants, just like Gabe.
Lorelai tilted her head thoughtfully and said, Consider this. If the attentions of other women have changed Gabriel, do they seem to have changed Alex?
She thought about it. Not really, no.
They have, Lorelai admitted, in that he is much more confident now. but where your ex-boyfriend apparently fell to his ego, Alex is desperate to stay grounded. He's terrified of harming or betraying anyone. As I said, my greatest challenge with him